Contracts, salary caps. Why do our favorite teams make some of the moves they do? It's usually the money. It's time for the Business of Sports with Andrew Brandt.
Welcome back to another edition of the Business of Sports with Andrew Brandt. I was really intrigued after the Super Bowl where we found out two exclusions from the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Former Commissioner Paul Tagliabue, who I served under largely my time in the NFL, and receiver Terrell Owens, of course, reasons given his team disruption, his diva-like presence. I think that takes us down a really slippery slope. I decided to find someone who was in the room and found Paul Domowicz, reporter for the Philadelphia Daily News, the Philadelphia representative in the room. Here I am sitting down with him in front of students at Villanova, talking about it and really taking us behind the curtain on selections into the Hall of Fame. And my first question, Paul, is how is it even structured as to who is in this room picking who goes in the Hall of Fame?
Well, there are 48 selectors now. Each city in the NFL is represented by someone from that city, a writer, a broadcaster. There are 16 at-large voters, which includes two former players, two Hall of Fame players, Dan Fouts, who played for the San Diego Chargers, and James Lofton, who played for a number of teams, including your former team, Green Bay. So there's 48 of us. The meeting this year lasted 9 hours, Saturday before the Super Bowl. Basically, what we do is there are 15 modern era finalists. This year there were two contributor nominees and one senior finalist. So we basically spent the better part of those 9 hours discussing all of the 18 candidates. And then we had, on the contributors and the senior candidate, you just have an up or down vote. They have to get 80% of the votes or they don't go in. On the 15 modern era finalists, which included T.O. and Brian Dawkins and the others, we had reduction votes from 15 to 10. Then we have some more discussion, and we have another secret vote that reduces the number from 10 to 5. Generally, the final five are almost I can't think of an exception lately where the final five did not all get sufficient votes to make the Hall of Fame, because generally the thinking in the room is that there are at least probably 8 or 9 of those 15 finalists that are deserving of making the Hall of Fame. So there are very few no votes once they get that. We whittle it down to 5. So
let me ask you this. How did you become a Hall of Fame voter? How does one become that?
Ray Dittinger did it for a long time. Used to work at my newspaper, Daily News. Then there was a couple of years where Mike Rathod, who used to be the sports editor at the Daily News, did it. And then I took over for him after he retired, which I believe was, I've been doing it for about 16, 17 years now. So generally they replace somebody if he retires, dies, moves, gets out of the business these days and he gets laid off. They've added numbers. They've added more at-large people. Used to be a much smaller number of voters. I'm going to assume that as we go along, the number is probably going to increase. I think they'll probably add a few more players. Fouts, it was good to have Fouts and Lofton in the room this year. Last year, they just monitored the vote. They sat there but did not say anything, did not give us any input. This year, they had a vote and also were part of the discussion. I'd like to see them add personnel people, former personnel people, NX players that can add something to it. Guys that have played with them, coached against them, those kind of people. The kind of people that we generally contact when we're trying to make, before we get into the room, to get some information on these guys and get a feel for whether other people feel they're Hall of Famers or not.
Before we get to the vote about Terrell Owens and to some extent Brian Dawkins too for our Philadelphia-based audience, What about former Commissioner Paul Tagliabue? He was denied entry. He did not reach the required vote. You and I talked before about being adamant against him because he has this label of the concussion issue being tied to him and the future brain trauma issues that we now have. Is that a fair assessment? Talk about your feelings about Paul Tagliabue and ultimately why he was not inducted.
Well, it was the longest discussion we had. We spent more than an hour debating Paul Tagliabue. I was pretty vocal in my feeling that Paul, it was on his watch that the concussion crisis kind of came to light. The league, for a number of years, denied the connection between concussion, repeated concussions, and trauma. They looked the other way. I mean, concussions were bad for are bad for business in the NFL, and they, in my feeling, looked the other way far too long until they had no choice but to address it. They put together a brain trauma committee in the mid-90s under Paul's watch that I felt was not... I mean, they had a rheumatologist that headed it, a few guys with PhDs that weren't even physicians that were on this committee. I just felt they didn't earnestly try to address the problem. And I couldn't in good conscience look at people like Brian Westbrook and tell him I voted for Paul Tagliabue. I don't know what... I didn't ask Brian what his opinion was of Paul getting into the Hall of Fame, but, I mean, I just felt that this was such a major issue for this league. I mean, probably the biggest scandal it's ever had. And it was on Paul Tagliabue's watch. So, I know there were people in the room that felt differently. I mean, that's why we debated for more than an hour. I don't know what the vote is, Andrew. They don't... He had to get 80%. There was a report that he missed by one. I question that because the only people that were supposed to know the actual count was the accounting firm that does the tallying. So either CBS Sports had has an inside source in Deloitte and Touche, or they made up the number. But either way, he did not make it.
Yeah, and with Tagliabue, maybe I'm biased sitting here in a law school, he was obviously a well-thought-of lawyer, a lawyer for so many years before he was with the NFL, Covington and Burling, president of Georgetown's Alumni Society. This is someone that has a lot of gravitas, and when I saw him denied, I'm like, is he unfairly taking that burden of what happened if you saw the movie Concussion, all of that kind of thing, League of Denial? But I think your feeling is, and if it's fair to say, it's just because it was under his watch as commissioner?
No, I mean, I just felt that he didn't do enough to steer. I mean, he's the commissioner. I mean, he reports to the owners. I agree with that. But there were things that he could have done. He could have put together a more effective committee. He allowed this members of the committee to destroy reputations of people, including, if anybody saw the movie Concussion, Bennett Omalu, who basically brought CTE to the forefront. Did the autopsies on the brains of many of these players after they died, and then found out that the damage that had been done from playing football and concussions. And I just, it wasn't the only thing with Paul. I just didn't see enough Hall of Fame issues and things that he had done otherwise, but the concussion issue overrode everything. I just felt that, not just that because it was on his watch, but I just felt that when it's on your watch, if you truly believe this is a serious issue, much more could have been done.
Will he come up again?
He could. That's going to be the nominating. There's a separate nominating committee for both the senior finalists and the contributors now. It's members of the main body, but they could bring him up again. I doubt it would be next year. It could be down the road, or it could, my problem with that is there's a lot of, they created the contributor category to, because there were so many people that haven't been able to get in because they've had to compete against players, general managers, people like that, scouts, personnel people. So to bring him up quickly, I think would be, there'd be a lot of pushback for that. But I mean, at some point down the road, I would expect that the league will try to influence the committee to bring up his name again.
Let's move to players. Did you present Terrell Owens?
No. A gentleman from San Francisco, from the CS Comcast Bay Area in the San Francisco area, was the main guy. The way this works with each of the finalists is there's one person that will present the player, which essentially usually is the writer or the broadcaster from the city where the guy played most of his career, which in T.O.'s case was San Francisco. 8 of his 15 seasons were there. So he spent about 5 to 10 minutes putting out a case for T.O., and then we went to the discussion, and both positive and negative. As I wrote last week, I felt T.O. belongs in the Hall of Fame. It was, that discussion was as heated's not the word, but it was as emotional as the Tagliabue discussion. And there were a lot of people with T.O., as you know, the discussion and the reason he did not get in doesn't seem to have anything to do with his performance on the field. It has to do with the fact that he was a disruptive player to a certain degree. Even I agree with that, and anybody that remembers the 2005 season after the Eagles went to the Super Bowl knows that T.O. can be disruptive. My point was that he was such an overwhelmingly superb player, put up such impressive numbers during his career that it basically trumped everything else.
That's a tough word to use these days, trumped. and my problem with the T.O. is that you really seem to have started a really slippery slope here. Because how do you value production versus disruption? How does that weigh in the future? You're going to have Randy Moss come up. You're going to have, Odell Beckham in 20 years, whatever it is. Someone who's diva-like or disruptive, or how do you figure that in? That creates a really slippery slope, right?
Yeah. And one of the good things about the way we vote in the past has been that, unlike baseball is allowed to take in character. A player's criminal behavior, anything he did off the field, they can use to consider when they're voting for him. And people in glass houses shouldn't be throwing stones. No one has the right to keep a guy out of the Hall of Fame because of his behavior off the field. At least that's my feeling. Thankfully, football doesn't do that. But they drew a line with regard to disruptive behavior when it was asked about T.O. because we're talking not about off the field so much. We're talking about locker room. We're talking about his, the way he communicates with his teammates. T.O. had some issues with his fellow quarterbacks, Jeff Garcia, Donovan McNabb, others. He was disruptive. I saw him at his worst in Philadelphia in 2005 after they went to the Super Bowl. He did not get a new contract, which he felt they had promised him. This came after, I don't know how many of you are old enough to remember, the 2004 season. He breaks his leg and tears ligaments in his ankle in mid-December. And he's pretty much given up for dead. Nobody expects him to come back for the playoffs. Well, 6 weeks later, he's playing in the Super Bowl, and has 9 catches for 122 yards in the Eagles' 3-point loss to New England. And that, among other things, he believed he was going to get a new contract. Didn't get one. Kind of imploded after that, as you remember, Andrew. It got ugly the next training camp. He was suspended at one point. There's no dispute that he was disruptive at times. But I talked to Brian Dawkins after Brian after the vote the other 2 weeks ago. And Brian was disappointed about not getting in. But I asked, he played with T.O. And I said, how do you feel about T.O. and the claim that he shouldn't get in because of his behavior? And Brian said, it probably took them, the Eagles, 2 years to kind of get back completely on their feet from what happened with T.O. And yet he still felt strongly that T.O. belonged in the Hall of Fame. Brian Westbrook, the same way Brian played on those teams. Brian felt he belonged in the Hall of Fame. Steve Young, who played with him in San Francisco, felt he belonged in the Hall of Fame. There are a lot of the people that did not vote for him felt he dragged his teams down. I didn't see it. I mean, you look at the records of the 49ers when he played for them. They had, I believe, 5 of his 8 seasons there. They won at least 12 games. His first year with the Eagles in 2004, when they went to the Super Bowl, they won 13 games that year. Which was the most in the franchise history. So, then he goes on to Dallas and does the same thing. They make the playoffs 2 out of 3 years he's there. He leads the team in receiving. So I didn't see them dragging teams down, but other people use that as a convenient excuse to not vote for him.
And again, who are these people? If you have teammates saying he's not disruptive, if you have quarterbacks saying he's not disruptive, who's saying he's disruptive? The writers of other teams?
Pretty much. I can't tell you what was said in the room, but from talking to these same people later on, we relay a lot of information in the room of what coaches and players said about the people. And both last year and this year, I talked to Andy Reid about T.O. And, Andy has every reason to be bitter about T.O. because of that 2005 season. And he was just effusive in his praise for him and said he absolutely belongs in the Hall of Fame. I relay that in the room, and, some of the people that were in the room told me later, well, Andy Reid told them at the time, that he wanted T.O. gone. Well, at the time, he did. But, this is how many years later, 11, 12, 13 years later, when you look at the big picture, you have a chance to reflect, and what you felt then is not what you feel now. And but people are going to look at what they want to look at when they're voting.
And as I keep saying, you go down the slippery slope. You say that you don't take in off the field, but now you say they do.
Yeah.
They take in sort of this, like you said, this sort of team disruptor, and again, that's hard to figure out. Other players in the Hall of Fame, I'm sure, were referenced.
Yeah.
That had issues with teammates or coaches, correct?
Yeah. And I can tell you that, and this kind of came as a little bit of a shock, but like I said, we had two Hall of Famers in the room. It wasn't unanimous on T.O. with them, which surprised me. One was very strongly against T.O. A good point was made by another writer later on. As voters, we're not social scientists. Anybody, I'm sure not many of you know much about T.O.'s background. Because he played in Philadelphia, I did. It was a horrible childhood that he had. Just to give you a glimpse of what, he came from Alabama, and when he's 10 or 11, he falls in love with a girl at the time. He wrote this in his autobiography, and goes to meet her, goes to her house, and her father tells him to get out of there, because he finds out from the girl's father that that's his half-sister. Things like that. And that was just the tip of the iceberg with T.O.'s childhood. You look at things that affect a person, and then you're going to keep him out. You see how it affects his behavior later on. With T.O., a lot of that had to do with later on earning respect, being disrespected, and it had a ripple effect on his behavior. And I, you know, as the writer who mentions us not being social scientists pointed out, you know, a lot of this has to have made him who he is, and now we're going to punish him for things that were beyond his control that have shaped his personality. So that's why you're right. It is a very slippery slope.
And he will come up again.
He will. Which is, it's kind of surprising, Andrew. I mean, both last year and this year, we have reduction votes before we ever get in the room, like during two during the year, one in September, another in November, that whittles down the number from 100 plus to 25 down to 15. 2 years in a row, he's made it to the final 15, which doesn't surprise me because, I mean, I believe he should have been in the Hall of Fame, voted in both years. But he's made it to the final 15, but then has been eliminated in the very first vote from 15 to 10 both years. I mean, he hadn't even made it to the final 10. So that's been surprising. My guess is he'll make the final 15 again next year. Next year is going to be interesting, only because Randy Moss is eligible next year. So he's going to be probably among those 15 and has some of the same issues that T.O. does. Yet my mind is probably not, I mean, they're on the same level. Both, in my opinion, are Hall of Famers. But they're probably going to split the vote even more so because of their personality issues. We're going places we don't need to be going.
You see this continuing as we go forward, even more kind of a subjective view of people's character, even though that's not in your criteria?
Well, I mean, the Hall of Fame has determined that his issues are okay to consider because they're separate from off-the-field issues. They're separate from Lawrence Taylor and his cocaine habit. They're separate from a guy who has been convicted of robbing a bank. Anything. I mean, we can't consider those things, but we can consider the fact that, you know, he and Donovan didn't get along.
Yeah. Before we take a couple of questions, another Philadelphia angle, you mentioned Brian Dawkins. How close was that, or if you can say, and what were some issues there, why he did not get in this year?
Everything was pretty positive about him. Safeties have been a tough sell in the NFL Hall of Fame. For the longest time, it's kind of been a position that didn't get a lot of respect because there were guys that they didn't do the things you're seeing safeties do in the league today. Brian changed that. Brian was a guy who could do everything. I mean, he could, he could cover people. He could cover teams' number one wide receivers. He might have been the best blitzing safety I've ever seen, maybe in league history. He played for Jim Johnson, who was one of the best defensive coordinators I've been around, and Jim knew how to use everything that Brian brought to the table. So I tried to point that out to people to differentiate him from other safeties, including, I think what hurt Brian this year were two things. One, Kenny Easley was a senior candidate, and he got in. He was a safety, played for Seattle in the 80s and 90s. And I think there might have been some sentiment by people, even though we didn't know at the time when we're voting whether Kenny had gotten in, I think some had the sentiment that, well, we're going to address the safety issue by letting Kenny Easley in. How many safeties should we let in 1 year? The other problem was John Lynch was also a candidate, a finalist. The safety played for Tampa Bay. In my mind, Brian is a much better safety than John Lynch. But John Lynch has been a finalist for 4 years. I think they kind of split the vote. I thought that there was a good chance both might make it in. And I think what happened was they both kind of canceled each other out at the end. The problem is that's not going to go away. You know, next year, both are going to be there again. And next year, you've got – this was a good year for Brian to get in because there was only one slam dunk candidate. That was LaDainian Tomlinson. So there were basically four slots that you could see him getting. Next year, you've got Ray Lewis, who will be eligible and almost certainly will go into the first year of eligibility. And, you know, you talk about T.O. and his on-the-field issues. You know,
right.
Ray Lewis has issues that are off the field, including, you know, a double murder that he was accused of being involved in at the time. Pleaded guilty, I believe, to obstruction of justice. But anyway, that's not something we can consider, but we can consider T.O.'s disruptive problems. So, I mean, Ray's going to be up next year. Randy Moss is back in the picture. It's going to be a much more crowded scene, and that's going to make it more difficult for Brian to get in. So we'll see what happens.
You know, before we have any questions, you mentioned the Tagliabue discussion, I think you said not necessarily tense. Has there been a discussion you remember as actually tense? Like there was, you could cut the tension in the room. It was very uncomfortable about a certain player.
There's been a few over the years. Ironically, though, Andrew, this wasn't the first time Paul was in the room. Before he was a finalist, before they came up with two years ago, before they separated contributors into a separate category, he was a finalist along with players. So his name, I mean, we had similar discussions in previous years. And this was when the concussion issue wasn't actually one of the main things we were talking about.
Yeah.
And that got, you know, for whatever reason, Paul seems to be a lightning rod when it comes to people's feelings about him, both pro and con. I mean, there are people in that room that think we've embarrassed ourselves by not letting Paul in. I'm trying to think of some players, but I don't think anybody's come close to the discussions we've had on Tagliabue as far as really bringing up the volume.
And is it always five? Is there an allowance for six or less than five that are selected?
It used to be less. The Hall of Fame has kind of messed with the number. I believe, if memory serves, there used to be a situation where you had two senior candidates each year, and you had to let in a maximum. You could let in a maximum number of six, but if both senior candidates got in, that would mean only four modern era candidates. So then they increased it to this, where it's five modern era, but they're going to go from year to year on contributors and seniors. Like this year was two contributors, one senior candidate that were up for vote. Next year there'll be two senior candidates and only one contributor. So they'll basically rotate from year to year. We've lobbied to increase the number of modern era candidates because there just are more deserving people that aren't getting into the Hall of Fame because we just don't, you know, that's kind of why we come under such criticism each year for not letting people in. And it's not that it's not that people in the room don't feel they belong in. It's that you can only vote for five people. I mean, you got to reduce it to five, and that's how many I would venture to say that if you took a poll of the 48 voters this year, most of them would say that at least eight or nine of the finalists this year were deserving of being in the Hall of Fame. But when you can only put five in, that leaves a few out that make us look like, well, how could you not vote for that guy? But that's what happens when you can only let in a certain number.
And last question in terms of winning. I mean, listen, you're talking about 11 players on the field at the same time. The best players play half the game. This is not basketball. This is not tennis. That's hard. I mean,
when you start establishing criteria for players that are so dependent, you know, the running back on the line, the receiver on the quarterback, that's tough, right?
Yeah. And also, over the years, I think that the Football Hall of Fame has put too, because of, I mean, my sentiment's always been that football's the ultimate team game, and we punish people that didn't win Super Bowls.
Right.
You look at the number of quarterbacks in the Hall of Fame. Overwhelmingly, most of them have been Super Bowl winners, some multiple. And I'm not suggesting that they don't belong in, but we've punished others because they didn't win a Super Bowl. They didn't get to a Super Bowl. You look at some of the great teams over the years, the Pittsburgh Steelers of the 70s, the Packers of the 60s, the 49ers of the 80s. Those teams have an inordinate number in there. Mainly, I think, because of the Super Bowl rings. You know, I'm not saying Super Bowl shouldn't count, but when you're talking about a game that involves 22 players on the field, you know, you've got to be fair to guys that had the misfortune to play for bad teams.
Questions? Any thoughts from the group? Yeah. Say your name.
Hi, my name is Nick. I'm the one out here. So just, what are the discussions like if you can't talk about off the field? Are you guys just kind of throwing stats at each other, saying, oh, he has a Super Bowl ring? What do you say when you advocate for a player?
Well, most of us have seen most of these guys. I know when I was advocating for Brian this year, I talked to about seven or eight former players and coaches that both coached him, coached against him, played against him, played with him, tried to paint a picture of who he was and the difference maker that he was. We do a lot of that because, I mean, it helps kind of clarify, I think, how other people feel about a player. Statistics are part of the argument, but the problem, you can't overuse them in football because the importance of some of the numbers changes from era to era. I mean, back in the 70s and early 80s, when they weren't throwing the ball around nearly as much, you know, you won't see passing numbers and receiving numbers like you see today. So you kind of got to look at those with a grain of salt. You know, the hope is that with all the time that we have to discuss these guys, that we're thorough enough with, you know, other people bringing in people they've talked to about guys, bringing in their own recollections of these guys, that at least we're being as fair as possible. You know, I don't know that there's any perfect process. You know, it's been suggested that maybe Hall of Famer, the whole committee should be Hall of Famers. You know, a lot of the Hall of Famers are haven't seen any of these guys play. I mean, once their careers are over, a lot of them just don't watch football anymore. So that, you know, there's no perfect process, I think, to do this. We try to be as fair as possible. You know, I was disappointed in some of the people that got in and didn't get in this year, but I think we were thorough, if nothing else.
Go ahead.
Jason, I'm on one out. You talked a little about with Dawkins, there's a log jam, and it's going to get worse. Obviously, you know, Polamalu, Ed Reed, they're coming up soon as well. Do you think that really is going to kind of push him behind those guys, or he still has a pretty good shot?
I'm hoping he still has a pretty good shot. I mean, I tried to make it this year was that Brian is just not. I mean, you look at Ed Reed. Ed Reed was basically a center field safety. He's got more interceptions than Brian, more interceptions than most safeties. But he never played up in the box. He never blitzed. He never did. You know, you couldn't put Ed Reed out on Odell Beckham. You know, the Eagles did that regularly with Brian. I mean, he covered You know, they could do anything with him. When teams went to 3 and 4 wide receivers, they didn't bring in an extra defensive back because they could just move Brian outside. So I tried to point that out. I think I had a lot of success in impressing on people that there was a difference between him and other safeties. But it's going to get, you know, Ed Reed's up and comes in 2 years. Troy in 3, I believe. I'm hoping Brian gets in before then. The problem right now is to try and get them to realize he's, my fellow voters, that he's different than John Lynch. Common sense should, John Lynch was a cover 2 safety, which I don't want to get complicated here with anybody, but again, he did not do 90% of the things Brian Dawkins did on a football field. Didn't mean he wasn't good. I mean, he could hit people into, as Andy Reid said, into the third row, but he couldn't run. I mean, he had nowhere near the speed Brian Dawkins did. You know, but I think there was a lot of sentiment that, well, and this is kind of one of the flaws of our process. My feeling is you vote each year for the people you feel are the best in the room that year. Other people put into a guy's been waiting 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, been a finalist 4 years. That was the case with John Lynch. So that's a tough hurdle to get over. I think there's enough support for Brian in the room that he's not going to go away. It might take a few years here, but I think he'll eventually get in.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about the waiting, and he's been up so many years. Again, this all seems to be kind of subjective stuff beyond the criteria of what they did on the field.
Exactly. I mean, you just got to shut all that out. I understand, you know, you look at a guy that's, yeah, I mean, there are players, I don't even know the year that you can still be eligible before you basically are. The only way you can get in after that is a senior committee. But there have been times when that's been the plea. I remember Claude Humphrey, former Eagle, played on the 1980 Super Bowl team. His last year, I resorted to it with him. You know, I mean, it was either, you know, please vote for him now, you know, because after this, the only way he gets in is as a senior. And there's no guarantee that the senior committee is going to pick him. Fortunately, 2 years later, the senior committee did put him up for a vote, and Claude got in. But, I just don't think it's something that should be considered each year.
Cody.
Cody, I'm curious about, you talked about it a little bit, but the Randy Moss, Terrell Owens thing coming up here next year. Obviously, the stats are incredibly comparable, and if you talk about on-field issues and certainly Randy Moss had hustle issues and locker room and those types of things, where they're incredibly comparable there. But when you talk about the public perception, when you see Terrell Owens, you always see the clips of him doing crunches in his driveway in the That's My Quarterback press conference. Whereas the last couple years, Randy Moss has kind of undergone this image restoration with the 30 for 30 and then what he did with Fox. Now he's on Countdown and a pretty enjoyable character that you see every week. Do you think the committee's able to kind of be in a vacuum and just look at the playing days, or do you think some of this image restoration will sort of soften Randy Moss in a way that it hasn't for Terrell Owens?
It's a good question. And I don't know the answer to that. You're right. I mean, he's done wonders for his image now that he's on TV. While T.O. has kind of become, for lack of a better word, a nuisance with the way he's been acting, bashing the process and that sort of thing. Although others have done that, and Chris Carter did it, and we voted him in eventually. But you know, it's similar to why they don't have juries read the newspapers and do things once a trial started. I honestly not sure. I'm not sure how many people feel maybe that Randy Moss wasn't as big a disruption as T.O. I don't know quite how you can make that case. It's going to be a really interesting discussion next year if both are among the 15 finalists. So I'm going to be curious how that weighs out. I think by next year, I'm kind of hoping that all the publicity that this issue has gotten in the last 2 weeks is going to impact on people in the room that they realize they've got to let it go. But my concern was when I've talked to people that were in that room and listened to them, at least with T.O., they're entrenched in their belief that he's too disruptive and does not belong in the Hall of Fame. So, and then you throw in the Randy Moss card, and I just have no idea how it's going to play out.
Well, Cody brings up an interesting point, because say you do now get to an end of a career and maybe you've got something hanging over you, and Randy Moss gets in next year. See, you've got a roadmap now. Yeah. Maybe you don't get a job with ESPN or Fox, but you're out there, you're doing charity work, you're rehabbing your Hall of Fame voting resume. It really seems like that could be a roadmap going forward.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm sure with Randy, people after he retired suggested, listen, because Randy Moss, it was a shock when he got into broadcasting. He's actually gotten much better at it. Initially, I flinched when he first went to work for Fox Sports One. I didn't think he was very good, but like a lot of people in the business, he got better as he went along. But I think you're right. I mean, agents, marketing people, they're going to tell these guys that have issues that, hey, go get a broadcasting job. Go start doing charity work, things that we shouldn't be considering, but that subconsciously or consciously are being considered.
In the back, yeah.
Matt, from the admissions office. With the media landscape being so different than it was 10 to 20 years ago, when there was just being a greater access to information to what athletes do both on and off the field, do you think it's more difficult now for them to make the Hall of Fame than it was 10 or 20 years ago?
I didn't catch the first part of that.
I got it, Matt. The sort of the changing 24-hour nonstop media coverage.
Right.
So Hall of Famers that got in 10 years ago, we didn't know what they did off the field. We didn't have the TMZs. Now we do.
Again, that's something we're not supposed to be considering. We're not supposed to be considering off-the-field behavior. For the most part, I think we've done a pretty, the committee over the 16 years, 17 years I've been in the room has done a good job of not considering that. Again, until T.O., I didn't, this has kind of become like a separate issue as far as, T.O. was a exemplary citizen off the field. This guy's never gotten in trouble, never committed a crime, never assaulted anybody. It's just this disruption issue that suddenly, when it was first brought up 2 years ago, when he first became eligible, I was shocked. Because I thought, the guy from San Francisco presented his case. I chimed in, what I thought about him. And suddenly there was just this flurry of anti-TO feelings about his behavior as a disruptive guy. So it's going to be, like I said, it's going to be interesting now with Randy, because we're talking about two guys with similar problems, but one that, as was pointed out, has rehabbed his image, but that really has no bearing on what supposedly is keeping T.O. out of the room, or out of the Hall of Fame, which is his disruption on the field. Whether you've rehabbed your off-the-field image 5 years later, it shouldn't matter, and I'm hoping it doesn't, and I'm hoping people change their minds eventually.
Back to my slippery slope. Yes, sir.
Gary, so recently, obviously, at the NFL, I'm thinking Adrian Peterson, you got suspended for a year. I know you're not supposed to think about it, but does the nature of what happens, whether it's being disruptive on the field as kind of maybe a prima donna running the ball versus maybe something worse, does that matter to you? Because in the end, it seems to me, if the player's good enough, whatever he does, it doesn't matter. He can get in.
Yeah, I'll amplify that. pick an Adrian Peterson, not only was he had this issue off the field, but it actually affected him in team because he was suspended or he was put on this commissioner exempt list, which is basically the same thing. So there is a team disruption with the off field.
Yeah, but again, the league let him back in. It wouldn't be something I'd consider. Again, they give us instructions before we start our discussions, kind of going over the ground rules. My guess is when Adrian comes up for, because he'll certainly be a finalist when in his first year of eligibility, I'm almost certain. They'll mention the same thing they mention every year, that you're not to consider off-the-field behavior. I won't with regard to Adrian. I mean, I understand the seriousness of his issues, but it's not something that I'm supposed to consider. And I'm supposed to consider what he did on the field. As Andrew pointed out, yes, there was a trickle-down effect as far as the disruption, but not to the degree that I think he should be kept out of the Hall of Fame. I pointed this out in a column last week. There are a lot of people in the Hall of Fame that are just bad guys. I mean, that we voted in because that's not something we're supposed to consider. There are guys, and it's always a convenient excuse of people that don't get in or people that are their supporters to say, well, they weren't nice enough to the media. Well, that has nothing to do with our consideration. And I think I can say that about everybody else in the room because of the fact that we've let in tons of people that, you know, that didn't weren't the most cooperative people to deal with on a daily basis. So.
Cody?
Not to put you too hard on the spot, but what about PEDs? Off the top of my head, I can't think of a guy currently that's been popped for games that has a Hall of Fame resume, but at some point we're going to have one. Do you think that will have an impact?
I don't think so. It's a different sport than baseball. Baseball is so statistically oriented that I understand why a lot of the voters feel strongly, although I'm not a baseball voter, but, you know, they're keeping people out that never tested positive. It's just that it's believed that they use them, and that's another slippery slope.
Yeah.
With regard to football, PEDs, even though people are suspended for them, the sentiment over the years, and I mean, you go back to, I mean, I'm old enough to, I covered the game in the early 80s, and you talk to people like Brian Baldinger, who remembers when he played in the 80s for the Cowboys, he goes to training camp and go into his dorm room, and the trainer would come in and throw steroid tablets down on the bed and basically said, go have at him, you know. So I don't think it's considered, even though players are using them in that sport and still are, it's not as much of a cheating issue with people. I mean, you don't see the uproar over, you see it locally because of what happened with Lane Johnson. But it's just not, you know, I'm trying to, the player, the linebacker that used to play for San Diego, Sean Merriman, was suspended a while back for using PEDs. He's going to come up in a couple of years. My guess is that it'll be mentioned in the room, but it's not something that'll keep him out. It'll be, you know, if he's kept out, it will be because people don't feel he's a Hall of Fame player.
You think Michael Vick's a future Hall of Fame candidate?
No, I don't. Michael was for too long was a one-dimensional player. I never felt he fully, it wasn't until he got to Philadelphia that he really buckled down after the prison stint and worked hard enough to learn how to be a quarterback. I don't think he was ever good enough as a passer to be considered for the Hall of Fame. Another guy, Donovan McNabb, when he was traded in 2009 by the Eagles, I felt he was at the point then where he needed about two or three more really good years, either in Washington or wherever he ended up, to be able to get into the Hall of Fame. And that didn't happen with him. I mean, he went to Washington and didn't do much, got traded, played with Minnesota where he finished his career, and was not very effective there either. So I don't think, my guess is none of them ever really will be even enter the room that he'll ever make the final 15.
Anyone else? Okay, we'll let you go, and let's give a warm appreciation for Paul Domowicz. It's really interesting stuff.
Thanks, Brad.
Thanks for listening to The Business of Sports with Andrew Brandt. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast so you never miss an episode. You can also get additional insider insight by listening to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Fantasy Feast, Even Money, and College Draft Podcast, all at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts are found.